What is up, everyone? Welcome back to the Red Shin Movie Podcast, the podcast where everything is connected. I'm your host, Jacob Thompson, and joining me is my co-host, friend, and the person most likely to start a canoe club by himself, but still qualify for nationals, Alex Perkins. Perk, how are you doing tonight?
I'm well, thanks. And yeah, after watching this one, I'm definitely buying a kayak.
I mean, you're familiar with the water. You were a swimmer for a long time.
Yeah, also, I rowed crew.
Oh, yeah, there you go. I totally forgot about that. Yeah. So yeah, you already got it. It's
yeah. I've got the runway. Yeah.
Welcome back to the podcast, everyone. This is the show where every week Perk and I review a movie connected to the last one we watched. If you like our show, we post pretty much every Friday on podcast services as well as YouTube. We're also on TikTok, posting clips there of the show. You can share with your friends, and you can all come watch the movies with us. Last episode we reviewed Redline. And our connection to this week's movie was the English voice actor Wendy Lee, who she played one of the choir ladies in this week's movie, Belle. So Perk, why don't you intro for us?
Yeah, all right. So Belle is a 2021 joint directed by Mamoru Hosoda.
Yeah, there you go.
Look at me. I'm getting better. this girl who's just kind of your average high school girl, but she's shy and her mom died, and she gets into this virtual reality universe where she's a super pop star and meets a ugly dragon guy and wants to know what his deal is.
There you go. Antics ensue.
Yeah, fun fact for you, this movie is based on Beauty and the Beast, which
I never would have guessed
really closely. You might be able to pick that up.
There you go. I'll go first, Perk. This movie overall is good. I think it's got too much going on. Too many different kind of things happening and things it's trying to do. The second act is a bit too long. But I'll say the ending brought together for me, and I really like the ending and where we kind of ended up. But there's just the Beauty the Beast stuff, plus the Hannah Montana stuff, plus, you know, the other this classic high school drama, and you know, there's just a lot going on in this movie. I think the Beauty and the Beast in particular, like with them literally like dressing up and dancing in like a mansion type, it's like it wasn't different enough to warrant like aping that storyline, in my opinion. I was talking to my roommate about this last night because he watched it with me, and I might be a bit too cynical, but like, I don't know, I feel like it didn't add enough to that story to warrant it. And also just like the way that Dragon is introduced and her interest in him happened to feel like too fast to me. I don't know. I'll keep it there for now. But overall, liked it. Good movie. It just had too much going on and a bit too long.
Yeah. So if you remember when we talked about Your Name, mm-hmm. I said I was kind of pulled out of that movie by the fact that it just seemed like a combination of two stories that I know pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to just contradict myself entirely and say I thought this is pretty great. Even though okay. It is, it's just Beauty and the Beast meets Hannah Montana.
Known coming-of-age movie hater likes a coming-of-age movie.
Well, asterisk. I'll do another just comparison, because why not? Throw them all in there. Have you ever played the first, like, three Assassin's Creed games?
Yeah.
You know how when... like you're running around in ancient Rome and you're having a good time, and then all of a sudden you need to play 45 minutes as Desmond, running around and picking up batteries
in the real world. Yeah.
Real time. that was kind of where I was on this one a little bit. The concept of the you and all that and everything in there is awesome. And the normal high school coming of age bullshit is was a little tedious for me.
That's why I had the opposite opinion, where I enjoyed the real world stuff much more than the you stuff personally.
Fair enough. But that's I will say with exception though, because that scene where the kayak kid talks to Ruka,
yeah,
and they're both embarrassed beyond belief. That was fantastic.
I was gonna say that's one of my favorite scenes in the movie, because I love how they just let it sit. And it's, you know, I think it was intentional that the, and maybe I'm reading too much into it, so let me know. It feels like the real world stuff, granted, it's also a world town, but like it's much more slow and calm. And we have scenes like that where they leave a lot of space. Whereas it feels like when we're in you, it's just like bam, 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 things are happening constantly. And I think it's like the internet is like that and real life is like this. I don't know how much commentary they're trying to do there. I mean, they do some internet commentary, like culture commentary with... when they're trying to figure out who Dragon is, or bouncing between all these people and the comments showing up on screen and all that. But yeah, I kind of enjoy the slower pace of the real world in this as compared to the very quick nature of the you stuff.
That's fair. I suppose I didn't really notice too many like pacing differences, at least at face value. I wasn't noticing it until the end, which is way too long, in my opinion, because the movie is kind of ending for about half an hour.
That is like, true.
Yikes, yeah. Guys, wrap it up.
Because we have that really nice like singing scene, but it's like, wait, we still got to go save the kid, which is like, that's a whole other thing we got to do.
Right, and that feels pretty rushed, because it has to be, because the movie's already 2 hours long. And then they get the closure of meeting the kid, but the dad just kind of runs away, and... probably nothing changed. If anything, they probably got a more severe beating when they got home, like just based on the pattern of abusers. But
I got the impression, and again, probably reading way too much into this, it seems like the mother died and or left in that family, because there's the picture, and Suzu reminded the dad of the mother, and he realized I've been fucking up big time. But again, I'm putting a lot of stuff in there. Yeah,
that's a generous reading, but whatever. Movie's what you bring to it, so I'll allow it. But yeah, I love the concept. I think it does enough thematically different than Beauty and the Beast. It has a like you said that it doesn't do enough to justify using that story. I think it does because it has kind of an inversion to it, which is cool.
Okay.
Because the whole the theme of Beauty and the Beast is, you know, beauty is within you. It's not what you are on the outside. It's what your true self. And that's Belle, or that's Suzu's storyline, is about, you know, beauty being within you. And then they throw in there also like a more, because I don't remember the source material because I haven't seen Beauty and the Beast in 20 years probably, is the Beast is just like cursed by a witch or something for being like too proud or something.
I honestly don't remember. Yeah.
I think it's something like that, whereas this movie gives a very tangible reason for like the Beast and his appearance and all that, and it's rooted in reality, his motivations and what makes him the way he is, which I think works really well.
Yeah, no, I ended up liking his character, and I was like, I'm like, don't be Shinobu. If this Beast is Shinobu, I'm going to be so pissed off, and I'm very thankful it wasn't. And yeah, I really liked where they ended up going with him. I guess the thing that was kind of struggling with is like when he's first introduced, he like breaks into the concert or whatever and all that stuff happens. I understand why the you community was obsessed with him and why they cared to figure out who he was. I understand why I should care as an audience member, and like why Belle / Suzu like glommed onto him so quickly. So like when we're after that and they're trying to figure out who his identity is and we're jumping between all these different candidates, I'm like, this is a lot and I don't really care that much at this point because I don't know who this person is and what the relevance of the story is. And then it felt like, to me, it was like, oh, we just wanted Beauty and the Beast. And it's like, I don't know. I think this the intro to their relationship could have been a bit smoother for me and had more than him just like interrupting her concert.
Yeah. So I was thinking about the concert interruption when it happened, and I was confused as to why.
Because it wasn't like malicious. He wasn't like trying to. No, he was running away from other people.
Oh, okay. Was he? He just like
he was just on the run,
getting in there. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes a little more sense. But yeah, I think you can tie the interest from Suzu into like just kind of her kind heart and not being willing to judge a book by its cover. But yeah, I think she does show a ton of interest in the beast right away. With not too much background, although generally, and this is probably also a comment on internet culture, but if you see someone in a mask, you know, everyone always is going to get obsessed over who they are.
Yeah.
With, I mean, just like a personal, like something that I think of along that line is like the DJ Marshmello who wears a bucket on his head.
Yeah.
Back when he started out for like a year, all the discourse in like the EDM community was everyone trying to figure out who this was, and there were a couple of like fake outs and stuff with all that because it draws clicks. People are interested in like seeing what's behind a mask.
Yeah, I mean, there was a whole Dream controversy. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
The Minecraft guy.
Yeah, whereas for those who don't, he's a streamer / YouTuber who wore a mask for his entire career and he got really popular, and then. You know, he was kind of pressured by his community to do a face reveal, and he finally did, and then he got a ton of hate, people calling him ugly and stuff, and he went going back. It's really fucked up, and, like, just shows, like, the worst side of the internet. And, you know, we didn't...
They do a pretty good job of putting that in the movie.
I was going to say, I think there's some pretty good commentaries of, like, you don't really use TikTok, but, like, the people kind of arguing with each other on a topic and like going back and forth. It's just like stitching in TikTok now where people stitch someone's video, tell them why they're wrong and all that stuff. Like that was very true. So I think stuff was good. I felt like they were trying to do like four different themes in this movie or four different topics. And I feel like if they just kind of stuck to one, it would have been a little bit stronger for me personally.
Yeah, I suppose. I think I can agree with you to a certain extent because I thought it was a very powerful and effective reveal that the beast is just an abused child.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it does seem like, oh, okay, we're pivoting here.
It feels a little bit out of the blue. We had seen those kids before, but
yeah,
it's a lot of stuff you have to do at the back end to resolve that storyline.
It is well supported with the bruises, even though I think it's insinuated that they're... metaphorical bruises or symbolic bruises?
No, they're actual bruises because the whole thing is because you like takes in your body, the only way someone could have bruises is if they were actually being physically hurt.
Well, but it also takes in your mind and your mental state too, right?
Yeah, okay, that's fair. So it's probably a bit of both.
And I mean, maybe they just didn't show that because that would be really aggressive to have
to show that,
like a PG movie. I think it's a PG, right?
Yeah.
So. Yep. Yeah, that's fair. It did feel like a change of pace, but I bought it just because it was set up properly.
Yeah.
I it does kind of feel like the first probably 2/3, 3/4 of the movie is all about being yourself with the beast as kind of just lurking in the background metaphorically and also literally. And then the last 30 minutes of the movie plus pivots to the domestic abuse as like a theme, I guess, if you call it a theme. But I can see what you mean where you think they're juggling a little too much.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not the worst thing in the world. Like, they do it mostly well. Like, one last thing they'll nitpick that I thought was kind of odd was just the setup of the world. Them mentioning what was it called, the five voices or like the five sages or like these people that like run the world and like set up you. And I thought it was just like interesting.
Is that the police guys?
Maybe. No, I think they were separate. They were like their own. Okay. They were just doing their own justice to make them feel better about themselves. But no, like the opening line of the movie, it's like the whatever five sages are ever set up. They like are in control of the world now and they set this up. And it comes back later, I think, because when one of the choir ladies tries to call the police or whoever to be like, hey, this kid's in trouble. They're like, oh, we can't do it because of like this rule. I don't know if this is like a thing that has been in his other movies. I don't know if it's like a connected universe kind of thing. So I know one of his other movies, Summer Wars, also deals with like an virtual reality type thing. But I think I would have preferred if you was run by like a corporation and there was like a privacy issue thing. Because we have the police guys have like the corporate sponsors, and his whole ability is he can reveal who the person actually is. And I kind of think that maybe would have been a different angle to go in, especially with the current state of social media. But that's pretty nitpicky.
And I also, I thought it was a choice. If you're arguing that they're dealing with too much, privacy and copyright is just throwing another log on that fire.
That's true. That's
true. Also, since we hadn't brought them up before, I thought the complete evisceration that this movie does on Reddit moderators is great. Because that's what that guy is.
Oh, he's just,
he's the Reddit mod who like thinks he's been bestowed upon with this power. And it's like, dude, you are nobody. You volunteer to do this. It's just, yeah, I liked the, you know, obsessed power cop guy. Although, did he really need to be in that? I guess we need something to be pursuing the beast. But.
Yeah. And did they ever say how he got that ability?
No, seems like... he says, like, do you know who I am, or do you know why it's me? And then he doesn't explain. Just says, like, the power can only be bestowed upon someone like me. And so, yeah,
and it's like, that's a very powerful tool to have. But yeah, and there's also like the kind of message in there of, like, don't be mean to people that you don't know, because you don't know what they're actually going through. And it's like, yeah, that's a good message.
By its cover, and,
but that's also like a whole nother theme to throw in here. And it's just, I don't know. It's a lot.
We didn't establish this, but I watched the dub.
Oh, okay. How was that?
It was good. At first, I was not sold because there's a lot of expositional dialogue right off the bat, which sounded pretty canned. But the actual actors for all the characters are good, and especially the woman who does Suzu is great and has a fantastic voice. And the English version of the songs, I haven't heard the Japanese versions of the songs, but it's not a direct translation, I'm guessing, because they sound like songs.
Right.
Like, the lyrics work as if they were a written song rather than just like a direct translation of the Japanese.
Gotcha. I was about to ask, like, did they do an English version of the songs, or was it in Japanese?
But... Yes. Yes, they did and the woman who does the voice of Suzu has a fantastic voice to sing.
Awesome.
Yeah. So I honestly, I only watched the sub or the dub because it seemed to be the only option on HBO. I just not looking well enough?
HBO, it's a separate tile, which is annoying. You can't just like switch the audio within.
It should just be a setting.
I know, but that's how they do it on HBO. So you have to like do a full search of the name, so the Japanese version comes up. It's same with the Studio Ghibli movies on there. It's a pain in the ass. But,
Netflix does the same thing. Remember when we tried to watch Bahubali and there were four versions?
Well, that was only for Indian movies. Normally Netflix is actually very good about that, where you can just switch it right in the thing. But yeah, for the Indian movies, I don't know. Maybe it was baked into the films as opposed to whatever.
Yeah, maybe they sent them four copies or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, I like the music as well. I really enjoyed the Japanese version. The music
was good. I am a notorious musical hater. Mainly because I think that there are exceptions. Like La La Land is one of my favorite movies ever.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell because of how white I am. It's just, it's what we do.
Yeah.
But it's because the songs feel like they just spring up naturally.
Yeah.
And don't take too much of your time. I thought this movie was pretty good for that. Because it's a musical, but there aren't that many songs. There's only like four or five. Mm-hmm. And they don't overstay their welcome until the finale, when I think that the whole finale, just every part kind of goes a little long. But overall, as a musical hater, this one didn't bug me for sure.
Would we call this a musical? To me, a musical is like the songs aren't actually happening in the world and the songs describe the plot. These were just like, she's a singer, so she's going to sing.
So why do I know too much about musicals? It's diegesis. There's a difference.
Yeah.
Because you can have diegetic songs that happen in the world. Like this, that's what this is. Where you can have like the non-diegetic, which is, you know, a narrator singing in the background. It's the difference between like Beauty and the Beast and Tarzan, right? Because no one in Tarzan actually sings. It's just Phil Collins in the background.
But what about like Bohemian Rhapsody? Is this an example of like a musical biopic?
I haven't seen Bohemian Rhapsody.
Or any like a Rocket Man, like any musical biopic that came out recently where they sing the songs of the band in the movie.
I would think you can just call that a musical.
Interesting.
Well, because it's not like, I mean, they're cued. Like I'm sure when they sing Bohemian Rhapsody, I'm sure it's because they're writing it or because they're performing it at the time. Yeah. Like, I think those can count, but also, I don't know. Like, songwriter biopics are a different animal.
I'm going to agree to disagree. I feel like the songs have to be, the content of the song has to be, like, describing the plot or the feelings of the character that's singing it and push the plot forward, I guess, as opposed
to... They do! Were you watching?
They're thematically irrelevant, but it's not, like... Yeah, they are! It's different.
Belle is singing her feelings as Suzu, and, like, I want to see the true you, and... You know, I am me for what I am and all that. I think you're cracked on this one.
We'll come back to this argument another time. Right, maybe next time we review a musical, we'll do some research. Argument. Yeah, but I've mentioned too. We haven't brought it up yet, which means I think it was pretty good. But I really like the decision to do 3D animation inside of you and 2D outside of it. I think that was a cool touch. I think the 3D looked great. I think it worked.
I honestly, I didn't even notice.
Really?
I didn't notice the difference, but I don't have an eye for that sort of thing. But yeah, I thought all of the animation was fantastic. And that's one advantage of watching the dubbed version is I can focus more on the visuals going on without having to like read word for word. But yeah, it's funny, for whatever reason, probably not an accident, we keep watching movies that are just really beautifully animated.
Mm-hmm.
And this one is no exception.
Yeah. No, I think the colors in particular are really beautiful. And yeah, just all of like, I really liked kind of this, the design of you, just kind of like the UI and all that stuff was really, it was nice to look at. I appreciated it. So yeah, that's our review of Belle. Do you have any final thoughts and or recommendations?
I mean, you can recommend each half of this movie. You can recommend Beauty and the Beast. You can recommend Hannah Montana. Or we might as well just say The Suite Life of Hannah Montana of Waverly Place or whatever it was called. Sorry, That's So Suite Life of Hannah Montana. How could I ever put such disrespect on a masterpiece like that? I don't know. I would throw Your Name as a recommendation. Just because it's similarly teenage love drama about having to try and figure out where each other are and stuff like that.
Yeah. I'll recommend another anime, not a film, but the show Bocchi the Rock. I've talked about it before on the podcast, but it's not a musical. It's an anime about music. It's about a high school girl who joins a rock band and has to – it's also kind of coming of age theme. So – I really love that show and definitely would recommend it. She also has pink hair, just like Belle. So there you go. But yeah, that is our review of Belle. Before I reveal what we're watching next week, it's bonus review time. Perk, we got a lot to dig into here. Where do you want to start?
I don't know. We can do the first two because we have them in common.
That's what I mean. Of those two, which one would you like to talk about first?
Let's do the... While we've still got the viewers before they click away, let's do our big adventure to the theater.
Yeah, so Perk and I went to a screening. I was going to say historic theater. I'm assuming it's historic.
It probably is, yeah.
Theater here in the Twin Cities that does a thing called First Thursdays, where they show a film First Thursday every month. And this month was the film The Inevitable Defeat of Mr. and Pete. And it also, as a bonus, we got to see and do like a Q&A with the screenwriter as well after the fact because he lives in the Twin Cities. And yeah, we just went going in blind. We didn't really know what to expect of this movie. I mean, we knew ahead of time what it was.
I had never heard of it.
Yeah, I never heard of it as well. Kind of a snatch cast. Got Anthony Mackie in there. You got, what's his name? The guy who played the homeless guy. I'm blanking. Jeffrey Wright.
Jeffrey Wright, yep.
Octavia Spencer.
Jennifer Hudson.
Thank you. Sorry.
Jordan Sparks, who I don't know if she does much acting, but she was on American Idol.
Yeah.
I remember that.
And yeah, so we went and saw this movie, and then you had the Q&A after. Perk, what did you think of it?
I thought it was good. I was really impressed mostly with the performances of the two lead child actors, because they're on their own for most of the film. It's yeah. just these two kids trying to survive while, you know, mom ran off doing who knows what and trying to exist in an apartment and figure out life. And they have really good chemistry as two little friends, and mm-hmm. Both really good performances. Mister as the lead, it's unfortunate that, you know, smaller movies don't get that attention, but should have been like an Oscar nomination for him, I think. Just a really outstanding performance.
Yeah.
And the story is good, because it's like nothing I've really ever seen before.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even a concept I would have imagined. So it's good to see that kind of a perspective on that part of the world that you don't really usually get to see.
Yeah, sorry, we should have just said at the top, it's set in New York. And yeah, it's a summer where these two kids, their parents are both kind of gone for different reasons, and they kind of have to just survive on their own without getting caught by the cops and taken to kind of child services. And yeah, it to me, it reminded me of Moonlight a bit, but like if the first act of Moonlight was the entire movie. And
I think that's fair.
You know, it's kind of, we see a lot of movies or just stories where you get the intro or the flashback to a character where they had a rough childhood, and then you kind of skipped forward. This is like a movie you stayed in that rough childhood the whole time. And it really like helped just add weight to the circumstances and, you know, the emotions and everything. And yeah, I mean, I really liked it. I think it's not a perfect movie, but like it was incredibly emotionally effective on me, and it really got me at the end. And like you said, the two child actors absolutely killed it. It definitely raised my bar for, okay, child actors can actually be very, very good, and I shouldn't be dismissive.
I feel like I'm always dismissive because sometimes they are super bad, but I have not been finding a lot recently where the child actors have been bad. So you mentioned Moonlight. This movie reminded me a lot of The Florida Project, which it's about a literal girl who's growing up in an extended stay motel next to Disney World in Florida, and her mom, you know, has no money. I don't remember, probably some sort of drugs, but she's also a prostitute. And it feels like kind of a combination of like, because Florida Project is what it's like living in a tenement as white trash next to Disney World. And Moonlight is the experience of a young black kid coming to terms with like everything in his world.
Yeah.
And the inevitable defeat of Mr. and Pete is it focuses on the perspective of the kid growing up in this mostly black community in New York. And it's, yeah, all the struggles he has to go through. I think it's kind of eye opening in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
My only real big detraction, it's not even a big detraction, just the only thing about the movie that didn't quite work for me is the misery outweighs the levity by a pretty staggering amount.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like, because the two kids, they have some fun moments where they're like grocery shopping or they're just hanging out and running around the apartment and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's like, oh, well, that went so poorly. I feel bad. He's got to feel bad after that. And oh no, now that, oh, and this, oh, and now he's sick. Oh, yeah. Come on.
Yeah. Just keep kind of stacking. Yeah.
Yeah. It's tough because it obviously it's not supposed to be, I mean, it's kind of is supposed to be inspiring, but there's a lot of negatives, and that's the reality of it for sure.
Yeah.
But it's really hard to watch. In certain scenes, just like how can things keep going so poorly for these two?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think for me, it's like there's just like one scene too many of misery, I think. But I will say, like, to kind of contrast that, if it to me, it felt like a lot of the things that they were struggling with were, because the theme of this movie is Mister's pride kind of being an issue. And so I don't want to say like he put himself in his position. It's all his fault. It's not, but it's like, a lot of times his pride gets in the way of things improving and not being willing to ask for help. And, you know, that gets resolved, or that's like the main theme. So I will say I think that helps it a lot more. The ending works.
Yeah, that the screenwriter had mentioned that one of the big things he was working with as a theme was like people's inability to ask for help. And sometimes, even though you've got the big, scary cop played by, I don't remember his name, but he's the guy from Lost. I think he's in Lost.
Maybe I didn't him recognize up. Him, but also I've not watched Lost.
He's also, he was in Tour de Pharmacy.
Oh, really?
Which is a weird thing to grab him from.
Okay.
Because if you remember, sorry to detour, Andy Samberg's character in Tour de Pharmacy is Nigerian because he's the son of like a diamond mine owner.
Yes, I remember now. He's the guy they talk to.
He's the guy, he's the African guy from Nigeria that they talk to, trying to like get his opinion.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He obviously hates Marty Haas because he's like, yeah, Africa, bro.
that's a great point.
Yes, but the whole movie, the cop walking through the halls is the big bad, and you know, in the end, you see it's like, nah, he kind of does just want what's best, which not always the case. But
yeah,
you know, sometimes what you think might be the worst thing, it'll get you on the right track.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was really cool to have the Q&A after, and he cited some of his inspirations, like you said. He mentioned Do the Right Thing, which I think was definitely apparent.
Yes.
For me, definitely the scene where Mr. goes into the convenience store and asks for ice, and the guy's not giving it to him, and then Mr. goes in and like pushes over the like magazine stands. Like, why'd you have to be the asshole? Like, that felt so Do the Right Thing to me. And yeah, anyway, but it was really interesting to hear from him and kind of hear about kind of like his process and also like what he wants to do next and all that. It was a very cool thing to get to do.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting. There were some good questions asked by just more people. There was a pretty good turnout. It was definitely cool. I'm glad we get to do it again. And now that I know that it's, you know, all winter long, we can just keep going.
Yeah.
Not that they're going to always have someone to interview, but
yeah.
Get a nice community discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, one other thing I wanted to mention.
Go for it.
There were a couple times where some things just felt a little too convenient. Like when the bully kid from like the courtyard accidentally confesses to being a rat. Because he gets caught.
I can see it.
No, hold on. Okay. Because he gets caught by the drug dealer when he... when Mister's trying to run away and he like yells at the cop and points at Mister, and Chris is going to come over and tell him the business. And then he's like, well, you know, when I ratted out Chris or ratted out Curtis, it's like, he wouldn't just accidentally, oops, I just said I ratted out your boy.
If you're nervous in that situation, you're trying to say anything to get you out and you fuck up. I could see it.
I think it was way too convenient. It led to a nice...
He needed his comeuppance, all right?
Well, yeah.
And he got it.
I think you could do it without that line, but it's... I don't know. It was a nice moment. That's really all I had.
Yeah, I was just going to mention, I was able to ask a question, which I'm like, good on me. But also, that old dude asked his question in kind of an out-of-pocket way. I don't want to put him on blast. His heart was in the right place, but I was like, all right, that's a way to ask that question, old man.
Basically the question was like, where do you draw these characters from when, you know, you don't seem like someone who's from that type of a background?
Yeah.
And the answer was, I am from that type of a background.
Yeah,
so,
it's like, don't judge a book by its cover.
Just because you think, you know, by the way I look or the way I talk, it's... Yeah, the screenwriter's from the projects in Milwaukee. So a lot of the writing in this movie was based on his real experience growing up.
Yeah. And I think it showed. I mean, all the characters felt very
incredibly real. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, if you haven't heard of it, which we definitely didn't, check out The Inevitable Defeat of Mr. and Pete. I like the rhyme in there.
Yeah, which I didn't even hear about at all. And with the cast like that, I'm surprised I didn't hear anything about it.
Yeah. Well, hopefully now it'll be top of the charts because of this podcast. The other thing We have all these viewers perking. You know, it's going to happen. Yeah. The other thing we both watched this week, which kind of shadow dropped on Netflix, was Wes Anderson's Roald Dahl shorts. I initially thought there was only one, but in fact, there was four. And there's kind of one headliner one, which is The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar, which is like 40 minutes long. And then there's three other ones that are closer to 15 minutes. But this is a nice little surprise. I think I definitely enjoyed Henry Sugar the most because it's just the most kind of fleshed out and it's longer in it.
And it's got that trademark Wes Anderson, a story of someone who's telling you about a book, about an interchange, about another book.
Yeah.
all the way down.
All that down. I love the production design. I mean, his is always fantastic. But I think these in particular felt like the most diorama-esque because of like the way they use the box to show levitating by just like turning it on its side so that it matches the background. Like, it's just incredible. It really felt like kind of like a stage play. And performances are great by Benedict Cumberbatch and Ben Kingsley and, you know,
Dev Patel,
Richard Iwade, I think I say his last name.
Yes.
It was great.
Yeah. I love this is just a great, space for Wes Anderson to apply his style. This is just these little Roald Dahl short stories. And you know, Roald Dahl is a bit of a controversial character at this point. But I did see a reaction from a Jewish, film critic. Mm-hmm. I follow, who said, I would have given Wes Anderson a break for using Roald Dahl, even more so because he cast Amon Goeth as Roald Dahl.
Yeah, I saw that as well in Letterboxd. Yeah, it was great.
Because Ralph Fiennes, who plays the ultra super Nazi in Schindler's List, plays Roald Dahl in this movie.
I think that's like the perfect way to acknowledge it. It's like,
yes.
Yeah, we know, but also we're trying to just take these stories and, you know,
go with them. And yeah, that they're small and simple stories, and they fit so well with Wes Anderson's almost picture book quality of style.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I had a great time. I think because I don't know if these actors have been featured in his work before, but Benedict Cumberbatch fits so well in this type of style. Dev Patel is always great in everything he does. And I don't know if I talked about it on the pod, but I owe an apology to longtime listener Ben Kingsley. Because I was under the impression that it was controversial that he played Gandhi in a biopic.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's not Indian,
mm-hmm.
but that's just my ignorance, because he's half Indian. His father was Indian. The controversy was supposedly around him using, or the, you know, production team using makeup to darken his face to make him look more Indian.
Gotcha.
But so if I ever mentioned on the pod that it was a controversy for Ben Kingsley to play Gandhi, I'll redact that in shame.
I don't think Kingsley. He was fantastic in this.
He's awesome in this for sure. All the actors do just a fantastic job.
Yeah.
I was going to mention
just the kind of loose ranking for me of the stories. I think Sugar's number one. I really like The Swan. It's a very fucked up, sad story, but I think it's very beautifully told, and that's not one where the production design I really enjoyed. And then I enjoyed looking at them, and it's just fun to hear the actors can do stories. But I didn't like love The Ratcatcher and Poison, it's because the stories don't really resolve. They just kind of set up a thing, and then we're just kind of left kind of emotionally hanging at the end. Maybe, and that's probably the intention, but those weren't as much for me.
I would say I put Henry Sugar at the top just because, as you said, it's the most fleshed out story and has all the layers and everything. I quite liked the other three as well. Especially I like how The Ratcatcher was an excuse for Wes Anderson to use his
stop motion. Yeah.
Yes, which is such a good medium for him as well. And Ralph Fiennes as the Rat Man is also great.
Mm-hmm.
I think the strongest of the bunch is Henry Sugar. And I had a great time watching all of them. I just watched them all in one sitting because it's like an hour and change.
Yeah.
It's pretty much a feature length if you put them all together.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting in Ratcatcher, what they chose to have a prop for and what they chose not to. Because sometimes they would have an actual prop, but sometimes it was just, they would just mime out kind of what they were doing.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was interesting. Because they had the rat. They stop motion animated sometimes. Sometimes they implied a rat was there. But
I think that's just more quirks.
Yeah.
We forgot to mention Rupert Friend, who's also good.
Yeah. I feel like was his Wes Anderson debut in Asteroid City? I feel like it was.
I couldn't tell you because he's the cowboy, right?
Yeah. I think that was his debut for Wes Anderson. And he was in all these, and he's the main character in The Swan, and did great. So, but if you're a fan of Wes Anderson, this is the most Wes Anderson you can get. You cannot get much more.
It's a great snack. If you really enjoyed Asteroid City earlier this year, it's another good tide me over. I don't know how he keeps putting stuff out. At such a clip.
But I mean, they must have shot all these back to back, right? I mean, it's all the same actors. Sure, I imagined it was all. And the stories, I mean, I was reading a review that's like he basically left them word for word. He just had to do a little tweaking here and there to get the scripts together. So I imagine it wasn't a huge lift, but.
No.
You know, I'd love to see more of them or just more shorts in general having this time.
Yeah, I'm definitely in.
All right. Well, perk for you in today, I got something to talk to you about. All right. I got an absolute stack of psychopaths content to work through. I'll try hopefully not to make it too boring, but so last episode I talked about Psychopaths season 1. Loved it. 10 out of 10. Highly recommended. In the meantime, I have watched Psychopaths season 2, Psychopaths the movie, and Psychopaths Sinners of the System, which is a trilogy of 3 movies. They call them movies. They're 1 hour long, like special episodes. And I'm currently watching season 3. I am obsessed with this franchise, Perk. It is so fucking good. Again, this is a reminder for the audience. This is a story about futuristic Japan, where society has been quote unquote perfected by this Sybil system that can tell if you're your job. What would the job you be happy, Sam? Who you should be with to make you happy, but also detect if you're like a latent criminal and you're expected to. You know, do a crime, so they're just going to put you in jail immediately, like Minority Report. And it's about the squad of you know, police detectives essentially trying to solve crimes within this system. And the way season 1 ended, I thought was beautiful and like perfect. And season 2, it doesn't reach the height of season 1. It's shorter. It's about half the length, and the villain isn't as compelling. But I think it still is worth the watch and interesting in that, like, the main character, Akane, her evolution from season 1 to 2 and how she exits season 2, she's pretty much a different person, and it's just very interesting to watch her navigate the system and try to improve it. And then where season 2 ends kind of changes the status quo in a very interesting way that I really liked. And that's the thing about this series that I think I find it so interesting is that they're constantly kind of challenging. The themes are kind of challenging our current society and, you know, policing, mental health, you know, what is the society we should be working towards, while also like changing the show status quo every time so they can keep asking new questions. And I think it's just super impressive. So I really enjoyed season 2. The movie is okay. It's not great. I'm not sure why it kind of dropped the ball a bit. The story isn't super interesting, and the status quo doesn't change too much, but it brings back a fan favorite character from season 1, and we get to see the world outside of Tokyo, or outside of Japan, rather, which we find out that the entire world has kind of gone to shit, and the only reason Japan is okay is because they isolated, and they have this simple system. So we get to see, like, a different country and kind of a war-torn country, and our main character going there to try to resolve something. So, you know, it's been the low point of the series for me so far, but, you know, I'm glad I watched it because it's still canon and leads to other things happening. And then Sinners of the System, which is just a dope name, I want to mention. But, again, it's a trilogy of kind of hour-long special episodes, each kind of tackling a different character in the series and, you know, different story. And the first one is fine. The main character is my least favorite character in the show. She is very frustrating to watch and kind of annoying. Get some more characterization for her, which makes it a little more interesting, but it's fine. It's not super amazing, but The second episode and the third episode are fucking phenomenal. The second one shows kind of the military aspect of this. What does Japan's military look like under the civil system and how they interact with other countries? And that's super fascinating. And we kind of get backstory on a character that we didn't know a lot about. And then the third one is, again, we're in Asia outside of Japan with a fan favorite character again. And him interacting with a new set of people and the challenges there. And then he, you know, things happen with him. So, yeah, I'm absolutely loving this series. I had heard it was good here and there, but I don't hear a lot of people talking about it. And I'm just shocked because I think it's just some of the best and most relevant commentary for like modern society in this really cool futuristic setting. So, yeah, I have season 3 to watch and then one more movie, I think, and then I'll be caught up. But yeah, it's absolutely phenomenal. I can't recommend it enough. Highly recommend Psycho Pass. It's just really freaking cool perk.
Dope.
Yeah. It's a lot of stuff, but it's definitely worth it. And all of it's on Crunchyroll, so if you want to watch it, it's all there. Nice. But yeah, that is everything for this week. So I don't give anything else, right, Perk?
No, that's it for me.
All right. Next week we are doing our final anime film of this run here. We're doing A Silent Voice. I think it was on streaming when I initially looked at it, but now that the month has turned over, it is only rentable. So apologies for that. Whatever. But it's a little bit of a cheaper rent.
Okay.
Our connection is Aoi Yuki. She used to do kind of background voices in Bell, but she plays one of the main characters in A Silent Voice. So I'm excited for that. But yeah, and then maybe, Perk, if we're lucky, the actor strike will be over by the time we get that episode in the can. Because supposedly this week, that we're recording this, it might be ending. So fingers crossed for that. But yeah, until next time, A Silent Voice is available to rent, and we'll see you then. Bye.
Bye-bye.